Welcome back to Starting to Scale with Emmy Faust. That is me, and I've got the birds tweeting in the garden today, which is absolutely lovely. I normally try and have a bit of a quiet background, but the birds are tweeting, and isn't that just fantastic? It's so nice. I don't know if it's because of lockdown, but I can hear all the nature these days, which is amazing. Anyway, getting on with the podcast, today is a really lovely interview with Nancy Willett and Eileen Zeffman from Cucumber Clothing. And I really love chatting to them because, like me, they've been on Dragon's Den. They had a really good show and they had really encouraging launch sales, but they were actually turned down. But actually, they were saying how this was probably a blessing in disguise because it enabled them to retain control of their business and stick faithfully to their brand values, which is something that's really important to them. And obviously, they got a lot of PR coverage from the show, which was fantastic. So I'm going to get on with the show, going to talk to Nancy and Eileen about their journey, about why they set the business up, about their vision for Cucumber Clothing, and why it's so important that to them to live by their values and, you know, create an amazing sustainable clothing brand for women. So I'm very excited to introduce you both to the podcast. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
It's an absolute pleasure. So if you could just tell me and the listeners a little bit more about Cucumber Clothing, because obviously you're going to do it much better, a much better introduction than I can. I know you've got lots of things that really differentiate the brand and set us apart. So I'd love to hear a bit more about that.
Okay. Eileen, why don't you, do you want to start?
Absolutely. Why not? So Cucumber Clothing is a brand, as you can see, designed by women, made for women. Nancy and I both would call ourselves busy women. And one of the reasons we launched the line was we really found that our athletic gear, because we're really into that, worked really well for us. And we wanted to have all those same benefits in our day-to-day wear that we wear, whether we're going out to a casual meeting, meeting a friend after coffee, lying around the house. And so that's what Cucumber Clothing is. It's sort of everyday luxury clothing that uses performance fabrics. So you get all the benefits of keeping cool. It's easy to take care of. It lasts forever. But it looks really great and it feels amazing next to your skin. So it doesn't feel like your leggings, your compression leggings when you're going for that run. It just feels like something really gorgeously soft that you'd be happy to wear to bed or happy then to belt up and wear out for a drink. We launched 3 years ago. Not quite, actually.
Nearly three years ago.
Feels like more. We've aged more than 3 years in those two and something years. But it's been an amazing journey launching a new brand. And I think what was great for us is we seem to have a product that resonates with people and also stands out because it wasn't something that anybody else was really doing. Or if they were, they certainly weren't talking about it. So,
I think that's the thing, isn't it? To be able to differentiate yourself in a cluttered, busy marketplace is amazing. And if you found something that does that, then obviously that's fantastic. And so how did you both meet? How did the idea just, you know, go back right back to 3 years ago? How did this idea come to fruition and how did you meet?
Oh, we go back a lot longer than 3 years. So I and I met at the school gate. We both have children who are long flown the nest now. Our kids are still good friends and that's really nice. And so we've known each other a long time. We've been friends for a long time. And we were just ruminating over different ideas. Eileen at the time had another little business. I was doing other work and we thought this would be a little bit of fun. Oh, this is a great idea. Let's have a think about it. Let's see if there's a kernel there that will take off. And rather foolishly, we thought it could fit in with our lives. And, we did a lot of research around our market and we launched with a very small capsule collection to really see if there was something that, people would want to buy. And honestly, we were really overwhelmed by the response we had, which was helped by the fact we had some great press just 2 days after launching. Lisa Armstrong, who's the fashion director of the Daily Telegraph, wrote about us, and that really put us on the map. And it became very clear early on that, okay, we just got to go for this 24/7 or 28/7. It's a hard work, but it's rewarding. And, we're sort of slightly changing and improving as we go.
It's all encompassing.
Very much all encompassing. Yeah.
Entirely. Yeah.
Being a founder.
Entirely.
So who designs the, who's in charge of doing the design part of it?
So I would say that it's a collaborative effort. I mean, my background is creative, it's design. I did a fine arts degree. But we have, one of the things that we discovered along the way, one of the lessons we learned quite early on the hard way, is that even if you've got a small company that's a startup, and even if there are two of you, you actually cannot do everything, and you just don't know everything. Mm-hmm. And the trickiest thing is you often don't know what you don't know. So as you're going along, you suddenly think, oh, I had no idea that even existed. Ooh. So with design, we started off with really strong ideas of what we wanted to have in our collection. We wanted it to be something that not only looked lovely on, was seasonless, was long-lasting, you know, in terms of design, long-lasting. So it wasn't something that was trend-driven. We had very strong ideas about that. What we didn't realize was that actually executing the concept that we had in our minds and communicating with both the sample maker, graders, our factory, was a completely different ball game. That was like, they would say, oh, well, how do you want this hem turned? And what sort of stitch do you want here? Well, what's happening with the shoulder? Don't you think you want an extra half a centimeter? We'd be thinking, well, maybe we do. Do we need an extra? I'm not quite sure. So we now bring in design, what we call design consultants, to help us around all of that, because the communication has to be absolutely exact to get the quality that we want. Mm-hmm. And so it's worked out absolutely fine. But yes, it was a lesson, another of the many
big learning.
Yeah.
One of the
many, absolutely.
Let's just say we're glad you're not interviewing our pattern cutter.
It is amazing, though. Look, what you were saying, I mean, you don't know what you don't know, because until you've run a business, you know, you just never even knew those things existed, or that you had to do those things, or that they were a possibility. And it's just a constant learning experience. But
we just thought, oh, you know, this will be fun, let's do this. It's like there's so much more than just having your product as well. Yeah. I mean, there's the whole thing about setting up a business, you know, there's the whole back end of it that you don't really appreciate. So yeah, it's been a lot of learning, which is good.
Yeah, I mean, learning's great, isn't it? I love learning. And so did you sort of set out at the beginning thinking, this is our vision, this is where we want to go, we want to create this brand, which, you know,
Actually, we spent a lot of hours at the British Library in the IP Centre, which is great. We held focus groups. You know, we really decided to target who we were talking to, because as much as we knew what we felt we wanted, we weren't that green to know that, you know, women come in many different formats, if you like, and with different ideas of what they want. So it's important that we didn't just appeal to ourselves, but appeal to, you know, wide range of women. So, no, we spent a lot of time before we launched in focus groups, talking to people, testing fabrics. We test everything we do, because without the fabric, we're just another fashion brand. And there are plenty of fashion brands out there, so that wasn't going to be a winner, really. So, no, I would say we spent a lot of time, a good sort of year and a half before we launched, preparing, you know, thinking about how we wanted to, what kind of brand we wanted to be and what market we were filling, you know, what niche we were going for. And really it's after launch with customer feedback that's made us, you know, look at other things and slightly adapt our offering and the way we do things.
I was going to ask about that. Did you do the sort of the market research and the customer research? And it
very
sounds like
so,
you did
yeah.
that very yeah. thoroughly, which yeah. obviously always really pays for itself, because then you actually know that what you're creating is wanted and needed. And interestingly, yeah. then that you created this small capsule audience. Sorry. So you said that you got sort of feedback about other things that they liked. So how did that? What feedback did you get, and what did the research show you? And how have things evolved?
Yeah, so I think from the very start, as Nancy said, we were lucky enough to have that very important piece of publicity, which meant that even from day two of launching our startup, we actually had quite a big customer audience. And one of the nice things that we found is we've tried to create what we call a cucumber community, because branding these days just isn't about pushing product. It's about allowing people to look into the brand and decide that they want that brand to be part of their lifestyle. They want things that they can relate to. And so we've really worked hard to try and create you know, a community so that people feel comfortable emailing us and giving us feedback. So from the start, we got some great feedback, and most of it was around the multifunctionality of our products. So because then we, our first collection was very much sleepwear. It was six pieces of sleepwear in two colors, but we had emails from the start saying, or, you know, messages from the start saying, oh gosh, I really love the t-shirt. I often wear it to work underneath my blazer. It just looks like a really nice work top. Or, oh, you know, I went out to the gym and I took the PJ bottoms afterward to wear after a class, and it was absolutely brilliant. So we realized that, well, we realized that we were missing a trick, actually, that our clothes shouldn't just be bedroom centered. They could be much more multifunctional than that. And so from at that point on, we decided to open our offer and make day wear as well as nightwear and try and meld the two so that there wasn't really a firm delineation between the two, so that some pieces that someone might wear to bed, somebody else might wear during the day on their holiday. And we also had feedback mainly from mums who had daughters or daughters-in-law who are going to have babies saying, this is great for them. It's perfect because it's so easy to take care of, but it looks really nice. You know, when you, if anyone's had a baby, you know, your brain sort of goes straight into the trash, and the whole idea of ironing something or taking something to the dry cleaner is just forget about it. You know, you're time poor. So that was another, you know, interesting thing that came up, and we've really tried to work hard to attract those new segments.
So let's move on a little bit. And you have recently been on Dragon's Den, and I'd love to talk to you a little bit about that. Before you went on, just very quickly, because I went on Dragon's Den, and one of the reasons that I went on was I just wanted to see if it was kind of real, and I was just interested in the process. So I didn't actually necessarily want the investment. And I'm just wondering, did you actively want the investment, or was it about the publicity, or was there what was the reason that you decided to go on?
No, for us, you know, it's about the publicity. So we're a tiny brand. You always have to think outside the box. We don't have huge amounts of money in fact, we've never spent any money on marketing, or all the press we've had has been really because we have an interesting thing for people to write about. So it was purely publicity. I mean, we didn't get funding, and I'm not saying we would have necessarily turned it down if we did, but it was to get those people to our website, and it worked. I mean, just watching the episode with the back end of our website open, you can see the number of hits that kind of program generates. And obviously they're not all your customers, but it's just getting the reach out there. And we had, I mean, I would say it was a very interesting experience, because we just kind of thought, I mean, so many people had said to us, oh, you ought to go on Dragon's Den. And then after a while it was like, okay, let's just apply and see.
So, yeah, exactly, just for fun.
Exactly, well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so
we applied online.
Fun?
It was just the weirdest experience, because we applied online, and you kind of get, it's almost like an out of office email saying, you know, we'll get back to you, whatever. And then I remember it very clearly, because I was walking down the road one day, and my phone went, and I answered the phone. It was like, oh, hi, Nancy. It's Ben from Dragon's Den. Oh, hello. You know, and it was sort of, could you come in next week with your, you know, with your proposal? And so then off we trotted to the studios. Where are they? Sort of Shepherd's Bush.
White City, yeah.
Yeah, White City, that's right. So off we trotted there with, you know, and at that point, obviously, it's not necessarily what you're going to go ahead with, but it's an idea of the kind of thing you're doing. So, you know, we had to practice everything. And I remember the night before, I had a dream that I had to do it all in French. Anyway, so off we trotted, and we did our pitch, and, you know, it was great. And Ben was very nice, and he said, okay, so now I have to sell you to my producer, and, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean anything. So you go through that process. And then after a few weeks, we heard, yes, the producer liked it. We were on a board. And that board meant that we may or may not be recorded, because obviously they want a variety of people, a variety of businesses from different areas of the UK. And then we heard that we had been chosen to record. And then we're told, well, even if you're chosen to record, it doesn't necessarily mean you get on the show. So at every point, it's like, okay. Anyway, so we went off to Salford, had a night at the Premier Inn in Salford with a lot of I remember the coach picked us up. Was it something like 5 a.m? Everybody in the reception is kind of all in the same boat. You know, you arrive very early on the set, and we were told to do all our own hair and makeup, and breakfast would be provided. And in reality, they do all that. And Yeah, I mean, it was a fun day. It was an experience. And I remember actually Ben saying to us then, you know, you're here now, just enjoy it, and what will be will be. And then obviously we're recorded and they say you may not make the show. So then we were the last episode of last of the
yes,
last
I think,
series.
I think we were, because they kept changing it.
It was quite good timing for us, because it was just after COVID. It was the middle of April. So I think it had been a month earlier, it would have been worse, really, because everyone was in the middle of sort of this new way of living. And by that stage, we'd managed to sort out how we were going to send things out safely and everything. So we'd had the kind of blip of COVID. The rest is history. But yeah, no, we had great publicity from it. A lot of customer feedback, a lot of people finding us and asking us questions because of that, you know. Yeah. And I think we were just talking about this, weren't we, about how the thing about going on a TV show like that is you basically sign your life away. I mean, we were in there for a good hour and a half for 10 minutes of good, in inverted commas, TV. And they want, there's a TV show. They're not really interested in your business. So the way they present it and the way they, you know, all the puns they come up with, I mean, we heard them in our head a million times before. But we've survived it. It's fine.
Well yeah. done.
And you've got 15 minutes of fame. That's it now.
And you got what you wanted, which is a publicity.
Yeah, we got what we wanted, absolutely.
Yeah. And so how much prep did you already have a business plan? Did you have to do that for Dragon's Den?
Oh, my God. Do you know, actually, I have to say the one of the really positive things about being told you're going to be in Dragon's Den, and then also being told, which you know this very well, Emma, that you are not allowed any notes. You know, it's like going into an exam. So you've got to memorize everything. You need to know everything. Everything has to be word perfect. You need to have all your numbers in there. You don't want to be that person on television who's like, I think it, you know. Absolutely.
You don't want to be a YouTube sensation for the wrong reasons.
Exactly. We spent those 3 or 4 months just going over our numbers so rigorously, you know, trialing everything, making sure that we knew absolutely everything inside and out about our business. So in actual fact, it was a sort of exercise that you would always want to do with a new business quite regularly, but you normally never have the time to. But this forced us to look at everything from the bottom up, every single layer, every single detail, due diligence on absolutely everything that we said about our brand. And so we emerged from it without funding, with great publicity, with great sales, and with a kind of new idea of exactly where our business stood. And so that was a huge positive.
That's a brilliant positive. And it's interesting, isn't it? I think we were having a little chat beforehand. I think if you know your numbers and you can rattle them off, they don't even show that bit, because that's not interesting. It's only interesting when you struggle. But I remember that, desperately trying to remember year one, year two, year three, you would remember gross profit, turnover, net profit, profit margin, and you're like, I just remember just trying to remind myself in the green room all day about how that worked.
Terrifying.
That's exciting, because it sounds to me like you got a really good outcome from it. Is investment on your radar? I mean, a lot of scaling businesses are looking for investment, or is it something that actually you're thinking you want to retain control yourself and grow a bit more organically? And, you know, what are your thoughts?
That's a really interesting question, because from the start, you know, when you think about business, everybody talks about, oh, you've got to raise investment. And, you know, so from the start, we kind of thought, yeah, we've got to raise investment. And we did speak to some VCs and, you know, we had some interesting conversations, and they're all very nice. And, you know, in some stages we got further than others, and they'd be like, you know, keep us on your radar, and, you know, keep coming back to us. But actually, I think it's best that we haven't. I mean, we're both now, you know, we're both in our 50s. We both don't want to have and it is normally a young guy, but not necessarily, you know, breathing down your neck, sort of, what are you for sales today? What's, you know, we've got the way we live our life. And we were both fortunate. We both have husbands who, you know, are earning, so we can take a little step back. But I think it's important for us, we realize, to not give too much away and to grow organically. And I went to a talk actually, it's probably about a good 6 months or so ago now, where the owner of Hush was being interviewed. And they were talking about, they've been going about 15 years now, and they've only just now, I've read, looking at taking on investment. And it was started by a woman when she was made redundant. It was her husband who was giving the talk. And he was saying how at the beginning they were looking for investment, they never got investment. And then one day actually they thought, we don't need investment, and I'm glad we haven't taken it on. And you're able to control and grow their business how they thought was the correct way and be true to their values. And actually a lot of what he said, I mean, obviously we're not 15 years on yet, and it does have its struggles, but I do think a lot of what he said resonates with us. And it's very important to us to have a, obviously it's a business and we want to make money, but it is about having a brand that we feel is right, that we're happy to be part of. And I would go back to Dragon's Den on that, really, because I think partly the reason they didn't want to fund us is it wasn't about a quick buck. You know, they're in it to make money. And I remember the new Dragon, Sarah, I can't remember her surname, kept talking about, why aren't you manufacturing China so much cheaper? But I don't want that kind of brand. We want to manufacture here. We want to be about supporting local communities. We want to be about giving back. And, you know, we've always supported women-led charities or enterprises. We want to be about our five-mile radius and doing everything locally. And even if, and obviously that comes at a price and paying fair wages. And we do have a lot of feedback about that. But once people understand what it is we're trying to do, you know, these are clothes to keep. It's not fast fashion. It's not about a quick turnover and sell at any price. That's not the brand we want to be. And I think taking other people on, you would have different values and really just want to make a, you know, money quickly. I don't think that's really sits well with what we're trying to do at all.
I agree. I think, you know, when you get an investor on board, there's some amazing investors and obviously some that, you know, it doesn't always work out, but it definitely changes it. And
yeah, I think
if you can retain control, you know, as long as you can, and you're happy to grow a bit more organically, then obviously you're responsible for all those decisions. And I think really key decisions about locally sourcing your explain a bit more about that, because I think that's a really good selling point about the fact that is everything made within a 5 mile radius, is that
so,
right?
Yeah, once we get our material in the country, and at the moment there's nothing made like it here, so we do import our material, but once we have it in the country, we design, pattern cut, grade, manufacture, we literally do everything within a 5 mile radius of our homes. We send things out using Royal Mail, although it's slightly changed just at the moment because Royal Mail is a little bit less reliable. But we try to do that to not put extra vehicles on the road. We took the decision to, we used to have obviously a plastic bag to take things from our manufacturer to storage to keep them clean. We reuse. And then one day it was like, why are we using a plastic bag? So at great expense, we now use, it's a completely 100% potato starch bag. And again, because it's just Eileen and myself, we want to do these things and we just do them. We don't have a board we have to go to pass everything through. We don't have a huge, you know, a big load of directors that we have to get feedback from. We want to make a change and we just do it. So, yeah, everything literally is done within that 5 mile radius. And in terms of our labels and our trims, we get everything from England, not even the UK. It's actually from England, our postal sacks, our stickers. So we're, you know, we're not perfect. We're far, you know, we'd like to have a very transparent supply chain, but with every collection, we're getting that little bit better. And it comes back to partly not understanding, like Eileen was talking about at the beginning, but the more we're understanding how things are done and the more we're understanding how to do things, I think we're getting a little bit better every time. And I think it's important to realize you can't be perfect when you start. I mean, you were just saying this, weren't you, about launching your podcast. You just want to get it out there. So you have to start somewhere and then try and improve on that. So you've got to realize you can't be perfect at the beginning, but you can always look for better ways to do things without giving yourself unrealistic, you know, bars to reach.
It's interesting. I speak to a lot of entrepreneurs and people that are already running businesses or who want to, and quite a few of them, they're holding back for perfection. And I'm kind of like, you've just got to get something out there. You've got to test it. You've got to get the feedback. If you don't get something out, you won't get the research. Like you were saying, all the feedback that you get from your customers, and you just have to take that first step, knowing that maybe what you're putting out there isn't the ideal, perfect thing
good
that
enough.
You want,
yeah.
But it's good enough.
Yeah.
And that's a great lesson. So Nancy and Eileen, before we finish, because I keep these sort of 20-25 minutes, I'd love to just ask you a few questions around what has been the biggest highlight for you, would you say, so far, and then on the other side, what's the biggest challenge? But maybe, you know, what stands out as things that have been, was it that big bit of PR the day after you launched, or has there been other things that you've been, you know, really pleased with?
If you're going to just choose one, I think it probably would be if it was only just one, because lots of great things have happened.
You can share a few if you want, but you know.
Okay, well, I'd say the first one really was getting that first piece of publicity and seeing all the sales come in from that, because it just meant that after all our research and hard work and the time we invested in getting the website up and getting the collection made and all our interesting communications with our factory to get the collection out, people were buying it and they were loving it. And we have a really low returns rate, and that's been from the very beginning, which for an e-commerce brand is quite rare. because clothing is one of those things people often buy two or three of the same thing in different sizes or different colors, or they buy something that doesn't quite fit, they send it back. We really haven't had an issue with that at all. It's very low, and it just, all those things add up to make us think we are making something that people want, and it is a validation of our hard work, and that feels really great. Nancy, do you have any others?
No, I mean, I agree with you completely. It's the fact that people want to write about it, I find it interesting. I mean, I would say Dragon's Den as well to an extent, just because it was, you know, in my normal life outside of Cucumber, I would never have done that. And it was an experience. So we've had lots of, I'd say actually one of the other things that does stand out for me is, you know, when you launch a business, you're so involved in running things and the day to day, you often can't see the wood for the trees. And I remember one of our design consultants we had turned around to me, and she now actually designs with Stella McCartney, and she was saying, you know, you should be really proud of yourself. You've launched a brand. And I suddenly thought, yeah, I have. It's a brand that people recognize, you know, and you have to every so often step out of it, and people will say things. You think, oh, wow. You know, you meet someone and they say, oh, I've heard of Cucumber Clothing. And just little moments like that, I think, you know, they're a good validation. You think, well, yeah, all that sweat, blood, sweat and tears has been worth it.
Yeah, because quite often we forget to sort of, you know, say well done to ourselves. It's all, yeah, so busy. But actually, you know, I think you've done an amazing job. And what would you say, what have been, obviously we've talked about the fact that when you set up a business, it's like for a lot of people, it's the first time ever and there is a huge amount to learn. And we're in slap bang, and we're getting through coronavirus as we speak. What have been the big challenges for you with Cucumber?
Well, COVID.
No, just generally. Has it just been the coronavirus, or have there been other things that have been really?
Well, I think one of the challenges is time, isn't it? We always say we have a lack of time with just the two of us. Lack of knowledge that we're, you know, however amazing we are, we don't know everything, but we're learning.
And I think specifically that can be, you know, if you want a specific instance, quite soon after we launched, you know, sales are crazy, and we thought this is a time to look at fulfillment, you know, proper fulfillment. And for whatever reason, we chose a place which was not convenient to us, and went through the whole process of getting everything into fulfillment, which costs a bomb, actually. If you're a young company out there, it costs a bomb. Time, effort, communication was very poor. I'd have to say the service was very poor, in that as soon as things started being sent out, they were mislabeled shoes instead of clothes. They were sent two of the same things, sent the wrong, you know, it was a tragic list of mistakes. And because we really pride ourselves on customer service, that was such a blow to us, because it felt every mistake that this company was making on our behalf felt like a personal blow to us. And I think that was a combination of ignorance. We'd never looked at fulfillment before. We didn't know what it was and how it worked and how much it cost and what we should be looking for. So again, a learning process. And so we pulled everything out, put everything into a warehouse, and took the fulfillment over ourselves again, which is hugely time consuming. But on the other hand, at least for the moment, we know everything is going out and it will be right. And if it's wrong, then it's on us. Mm-hmm. And then we can immediately say, look, we're terribly sorry, we made a mistake. So I think it's always that thing. It's time management. It's just sort of ignorance, sheer ignorance of things that you don't know.
Very interesting you say that. I always say to my clients, you know, the customer journey, the customer experience is so important. And quite often I will buy my clients' product, and they too might be using fulfillment or logistics business and they haven't done that. And it could turn up in, you know, in a box, it's all bashed around, and, you know, you're selling a premium product. So I think it's really interesting that you said that, because you're wanting to inject your brand and your brand values at every stage of the customer journey. So you've decided to take that in-house, and that's an amazing learning, actually. And I've spoken to clients who've had similar issues. So definitely something for founders to look out for. That comes to the end of our interview, Nancy and Eileen. Thank you so much for coming on. Is there anything you'd like to share with the listeners? I will obviously link to your website and all your social media platforms, but is there anything else that you wanted to add?
Well, aside from saying please come and visit our website I'm not going to say right away, I'm going to say in a couple of weeks, because one of the things, exciting things we're doing now is we're doing a whole kind of brand strategy, and we're revamping our website, and we're revamping all of that. So, I mean, obviously do come and visit us now, but keep coming to visit us, because everything will be changing, not completely different, but there'll be some changes, and we hope you like them. Hope you like us. Thank you.
Thanks so much. It's been fun.
I look forward to seeing the work from your brand strategy, and maybe I'll do a little LinkedIn newsletter about that or something. We can reconnect. Let me know when it's live.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Starting to Scale with Emmy Faust. That's me. It has been great to have you listening again this week. If you know other founders that are looking to grow profitable, sustainable businesses, then please do let them know about this. And it would make my day if you leave me a review on iTunes and let me know what you are enjoying from this podcast. If you want to get in touch, you can do that through my website, emmyfaust.com. And don't forget, I've got lots of great resources on my website. Go to emmyfaust.com/free. Have a fantastic week, and I look forward to catching up with you again next week.